intéressant entre, vous avez l'Association des travailleuses et travailleurs étrangers temporaires et l'Association des travailleuses et travailleurs d'agences de placement. Et si vous vivez des conditions de travail difficiles, donc voilà, vous pouvez contacter le centre 514-342-2111, 514.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Dorjage in the Ganyagaha language, and Munayang and Anishinaabe Mohan, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah Day, live in studio on Thursday, January 25th, 2024. It is our third show of the new year. And before I begin and let you know what's coming up, very important to mention that there was a very special birthday yesterday. A very happy birthday and celebration to Estelle Rosen, one of the original, or I think the original person. She took it over from someone else beforehand, but the person who helmed Upstage for so many years, a passionate lover of theater and the arts in this city. I'm hoping to stop by next week with some flowers and cake to celebrate with her, but she's doing well and keeping very, very busy. And Estelle, thank you so much for everything you've done for theater in Montreal and for me as well as a radio person, and everything you've done for CKUT. So happy birthday, Estelle Rosen. By the way, I met Estelle because I was volunteering one night at an awards show, kind of pre-Metas. It was when we had Meccas, the Critics Awards, and they were held at La Sala Rosa, and I was waiting for the 51 bus stop after the show, and I ran into Estelle waiting for the 51 bus stop on St. Joseph and Laurier, and she said, oh, I recognize you from the event, and we got chatting, and I said, I love radio, and she said, you should come to Upstage. So very special person in my heart. Anyways, what's coming up on the show tonight? We are absolutely jam-packed. First up, a playwright inspired by his own role as a parent looks to delve into that anxiety of raising a family. Joseph Schrag's new play for Scapegoat Theatre debuts at Wildside Festival at Centaur next week. It's about a single mom, a kid, and a chimera-like creature. Joseph also co-directs this Scapegoat piece. We'll have him in just a couple of moments. Black Theatre Workshop is maintaining its long, fruitful relationship with gifted writer Donna Michelle St. Bernard. Next week will be the premiere of her new work, Diggers, and it's about three grave diggers who care for the dead of a small town down the road. When illness strikes, it changes the rules of their work. Performer Warona Setsuelo will join me. Actor and director Charles Bender on his latest project, making English language Indigenous theater from the rest of Canada connect with Quebec audiences. He will be helming readings at the Semaine de la Dramaturgie Autochtone next week. This is happening at Théâtre La Licorne, which will include two plays that Charles himself has translated. And finally, before the end of the hour, Fée sans foi, a new dance show about carving out one's own space in the queer francophone space here in the province. It is a Wildside La Chapelle collaboration that will be happening next week, and we will chat with the creator and choreographer and dancer, Georges Nicolas Tremblay. I'll also have some very exciting music from that show as well. You can follow us for updates, images of our guests, reviews of shows, and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. Got a neat snapshot of Fée sans foi there, and also a really nice publicity image from the show we're going to talk about right now. It is called Ricky, and it's being described as a dark fable in which to explore parental anxiety. As I mentioned earlier, it is written by Joseph Schrag, who is a co-leader at Scapegoat Carnival Theatre. Joseph co-directs the show with his artistic partner, Allison Darcy. It will be happening January 31st to February the 5th at the Centaur. And Joseph joins me on the line. Welcome to Upstage.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. So this is a personal one. I mean, I think every play is probably personal on some level, but this applies to you because you're a dad. And tell me about your family and maybe whether you ever expected that this would be fodder for your work.
Well, it sort of happened kind of the other way around, in the sense that I wrote it in 2018, about 4 months before my daughter was born. And I just had this thought, like, I'm probably not going to be able to write for a little while. So I want to just finish something. And the exercise was, the subject matter doesn't matter. The play has to have a beginning, middle, end, and it has to go forward in time. And so I had very little time, and I just, like, wrote this thing really quickly. I worked all day, every day. And looking back, when I look at the piece, I think there's a lot in it that is about parental anxiety. And I think it was coming from somewhere in the back of my mind, giving myself that moment to write right before I knew there was going to be this big kind of life change.
There's nothing like a certain deadline to kind of get you motivated to finish something. Has that always been your MO as a writer? Or was this a kind of like a totally new challenge for you, where you were like, I know I will not, I'm going to be doing feedings, I'm going to be running to the grocery store and the pharmacy, I won't have time to do this, I need to get it out now. Was that a new experience for you as a writer?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I've always been good about meeting deadlines when I'm working on things and there's other people involved, or there's grants, or there's whatever. But I think when I try to write for myself, and I know it's pretty common, I'm just terrible. I'll start something, stop it. I'll, like, have a project that goes on and on for years that I keep tinkering with. And so, yeah, it was exactly like, to write something for myself, it was the perfect deadline, because I was like, I can't imagine. I mean, and at that point, my experience was just seeing things in movies about what parenthood is, which was, you know, indicative enough to be like, you got to finish something.
We're speaking with Joseph Schrag, whose new play is Ricky, R-I-C-K-I, and it's going to be opening at Centaur's Wildside next week. So we meet a single mom and her son. They've just moved to Montreal. There's always challenges facing families, especially single parent ones. Tell me about what she's facing in particular.
Well, in this particular case, she's someone who grew up in Montreal and moved to a farm with her husband, who had inherited the farm from his family, and he ends up dying, and she sells the farm to come to move to Montreal now without much money, and they have to rebuild their lives, and they have to, in a way, renegotiate their relationship, which I think is a big part of the play. It doesn't really dwell in the past. It's almost a bit like a horror movie. Like, you get the basics, and then it's really moving into increasingly surreal situations, but it's how the child is 10 years old, wanting to go out, wanting to explore the city, and the woman is, you know, a little nervous about this because they didn't grow up here.
So it's a new territory, and she's kind of rediscovering her old city as well.
Yeah, exactly.
A new territory for her child. Now, parents know that they're, you know, you're kind of having to navigate your child through things that you kind of got over when you were a kid, like being scared of the dark, being scared of monsters, knowing very well there's a lot of scary things in life, for real. Mm-hmm. But you have to shepherd your child through that. And a monster comes into play here. Why did you choose to have a monster, make this kind of a fable as opposed to a more realistic type of story?
Well, yeah, it was sort of about the process, which was just trying to write as fast as I could. And again, the rules were just like, just time moves forward, it's linear, but anything can happen. And so I introduced this kind of weird mentor figure that the child meets. And then when I got to Act 3, I just sort of craved, like, I feel like I'm going to give away the whole show, but I won't be too specific, but I just wanted a big change. And I really like work that sort of, you expect it to go in one direction and then it abruptly goes into another direction. And so, yeah, I was open to the possibility of very surreal shifts of magic realism and various forms of address, like really being able to kind of take flight from the normal realistic play once it was already established.
Is this a monster that is benevolent, or is it truly scary? I understand you're kind of pulling on the world of horror here as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been such a huge debate throughout the process, because I feel like this monster, in a way, has a bit of a demon in him, has a bit of a dark side, and the question is just, what is really permissible in the domestic space? So I think that, again, trying not to give everything away, it's sort of stress test. It pushes as far as it can what is really permissible.
I'm speaking with Joseph Schrag, the writer of Ricky, coming to Centaur's Wildside next week. A really nice cast, Julie Tomiko Manning, Gabe Maharjan, and John Lachlan Stewart, who is playing the creature, which is, I don't think, too much of a reveal. He's a very gifted performer and also happens to be a single parent as well. You're co-directing this show as well as the writer. Was that an interesting element to come into play, a certain realism?
Yeah, I think just because, it was started so long ago, it was canceled twice because of the pandemic. And I just started spending so much time, like, starting to think about props or music. There's a particular clown lamp that I spent weeks trying to find the exact thing on eBay. And so by the time Alice and I started working together, usually she directs and I write, I just had so many things that were already in motion that we thought, why don't we try to direct it together?
What was that experience like for you?
Good. I mean, we've co-directed before, and I think as long as we feel like our roles are clear and we gravitate really to different aspects of theater. So I felt like it's gone very well.
I just want to go back. It's just neat to see that in your cast, you have someone who can relate to this experience as a single parent himself. Was that part of the discussion, the parenting element with your cast?
Definitely, yeah, with John. I mean, John brought a lot of that to his character. And we had some really great conversations.
Fabulous. And now I wanted to ask as well, you're going to have a talk back on Friday, February the 2nd. You have a scholar in town, Michael M. I think it's Chemers or Schemers, who actually writes about monsters in theater on stage. This is really neat. I think this will really deepen the audience's experience with the play. Did you refer to any of Michael's work as you were developing the piece, or did you make this connection after?
Yeah, I feel like a bit of a nerd, but I got really interested. He wrote a book about the history of the representation of the monster in theater, and he wrote a second book about that. And then there's a whole field in academia of interdisciplinary studies on monsters, like in cinema and culture. And so, I've read all his work, and I'm just so thrilled that he's going to come out and talk about the play. I could go on about what the monster theory means, but yeah.
And that book is called The Monster in Theater History, This Thing of Darkness, which I might be adding to my reading list, but you can see Michael speak after the show on the Friday show, February the 2nd. And it's kind of funny, you mentioned that, this is a show that is a bit, quote, on the weirder side. Now, Wildside is known for putting on weird shows. So I was surprised to see you say that, because your work does, at Scapegoat, does have to have a surreal or quirky vibe to it. Is this even further out of your comfort zone, this piece?
I think so. I just didn't, when I wrote it, I kind of put it away for a long time. I wasn't really sure what I thought of it. And, slowly, like, I did a mentorship with the playwright, Greg MacArthur, who was very supportive. And then Allison applied to the Wildside, and I was kind of like, this is just not gonna fit. And Rose was really interested in it. So, I mean, I think it is weird. There's other absurd elements. As I said, it kind of like it moves forward in time, but it still breaks linearity in many other ways.
And that is Rose Potek, who is the curator for Wildside. Joseph, will you go back to monsters in the future as a thing in your writing?
I think I really am interested in kind of how we represent non-humans on stage, and it's something that's come up in my work a lot. Another project we're working on is an adaptation of Aristophanes' The Birds for kids. So then I feel like birds are also this sort of non-human, and how do you represent kind of humans and otherness? In that case, it's animals. So I feel like the non-human is, and including monsters as well, is really interesting to me.
Well, Joseph, I'm really excited to see the show. Thank you so much for coming on to talk to us about something very personal, being anxious as a parent. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Joseph Schrag, who is the writer and co-director of Ricki, R-I-C-K-I, and it is going to be part of the Wildside Festival coming up next week. The festival, of course, is ongoing. We were talking about it just last week. But this presentation starts on the 30th, on the Tuesday, with a preview and runs until February the 3rd. So go get your tickets, centaurtheater.com, or you can call 514-288-3161 for more information. Tickets are between $10 to $25. And I believe one of the shows is going to be a matinee on Saturday, February the 3rd at 3 p.m. If you want to learn more about the company, scapegoatcarnival.com. You can also follow them on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter as well, or X. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Sarah DeA. We will be covering one more Wildside show that's going to be happening at La Chapelle and not Centaur itself. It is called Fête Sans Foi, and we will chat with the creator later this hour. But next, stay tuned. We will take you to the Siegel Center studio, where they're getting ready to put on Black Theater Workshop's new play, Diggers. It's a world premiere by Donna Michelle St. Bernard. We're going to speak with one of the performers in just a moment.
Gem Art Center is pleased to present When Big Man Talk, the exhibit. Come experience a captivating fusion of paintings, photography, an immersive virtual reality experience and more. To kick off the exhibit, Gem Arts is presenting the film African Redemption, the life and legacy of Marcus Garvey, screening January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. Then experience When Big Man Talk, the exhibit, from February 3 to 10 at Galerie Lucie Michel, and after that from February 11 to 14 at the UNIA. For tickets, call 438-507-9258 or head to jam-montreal.com and click Jam Arts Center.
Tu t'es occupé de ton ami qui saignait du nez après qu'il soit rentré dans une porte patio fermée, sans rire de lui?
Évidemment.
Avec ton empathie, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Every Thursday from 6 to 7, we talk about theater in Montreal. Right now, we're listening to some music by Air, La Femme d'Argent. And we were due to speak with Borona Setsuelo. I'm having some trouble connecting, so I'd like to tell you about her show. Black Theater Workshop is going to be premiering Diggers. It's a play by Donna Michelle St. Bernard, who is an Ontario-based writer, been nominated 3 times for the Governor General's Award for English Language Drama, including Gas Girls, which is a show that Black Theatre Workshop put on some years ago. And so this is a new show from Donna Michelle, and it follows the world of 3 workers. They are grave diggers who are employed by the town down the road. Some of the inspiration was here was coming out of the pandemic and looking at people who have to work no matter what, essential workers. The work keeps going, can't just stay at home and shut down or stop work or be able to work from home in the meantime. And I'll just mention this from the press release. Donna Michelle's work offers sometimes heavy but always important explorations of the human experience. Quote from Diane Marie Bridge, who is she's not as recent, but she was hired just a couple years back. The artistic director at Black Theatre Workshop is quoted as saying, "It's such an honor to continue to build our relationship with playwright Donna Michelle with this commission and production of Diggers as the latest addition to her epic 54-ology project. We welcome audiences back into the theater with a piece that, under Pulga Mochochama's movement-based direction, truly captures an eloquent, sometimes dire, and ironic summation of how community functions in both solidarity and crisis." Here's the synopsis. Abdul and Solomon introduce newbie Bay to the intricacies and dignity of grave digging for the town down the hill. But when illness hits the town, the 3 must make the best of a bad situation as their workload increases and their support from the community diminishes. Full of song, laughter, tears, and beautiful humanity, Diggers is a tribute to essential workers. So Werona, who is one of my favorite actors to see on stage, not just an actor, but also an artistic mentor based here in Montreal, is playing the role of Sheila. Abdul is played by Chance Jones. Bay is played by Jelani Gilbert-Norin, and Solomon, Christian Paul. So those 3 performers are the grave diggers, and her character's name is Sheila. And this is going to be actually neat to mention a CKUT co-presentation, which is why I was so excited to talk with Werona tonight. So it is going to be happening February 1st, opening a week from tonight, running until the 17th at the Siegel Center Studio. For tickets and more information, visit siegelcenter.org or call 514-739-7944. Of course, you can also go visit Black Theatre Workshop as well. They are online. This is a co-production as well with Prairie Theatre Exchange with BTW. Of course, next month, February, starting in a couple of days, is Black History Month. And so BTW, which puts on excellent work throughout the year, not just plays, but also readings and activities for developing artists and so much more, a fantastic mentorship program. They also always have a play in February that is always very thoughtfully put on and usually quite exceptional. I think this is such a cap for the Montreal theater community, but it is the oldest established Black theater company in the country. So chapeau to the team at Black Theater Workshop. This new play, Diggers by Donna Michelle St. Bernard, is going to be at the Siegel Center February 1st to the 17th. Still to come on Upstage this evening, we are going to meet Charles Bender, who is an actor and director very established here in Montreal, and he has a particular eye towards writing by Indigenous authors in the ROC, in the rest of Canada, and he wants to introduce it to audiences here as well. So he has started up with an artistic partner, Semaine de la Dramaturgie Autochtone. It is going to be starting on Monday and running until the 31st, Wednesday at Théâtre La Licorne. It is 3 nights of readings by 3 different playwrights. Tickets are very affordable, $10 at the door. You can find out more at théâtrelalicorne.com. I'm going to be getting Charles on the line in just a couple of minutes to find out more about how he selected the plays, why he feels there needs to be dialogue between what we might call ROC, but they're labeling as English language plays with Quebec audiences here. We've seen such a beautiful épanouissement of francophone language, indigenous writing here in Quebec. A lot of more shows that are being put on, and Charles in particular, you're seeing him be very, very busy in Montreal and elsewhere, and he's choosing to spotlight works that are coming from outside of Quebec as a province. So that's going to be really interesting to dig into. And then afterwards, we will be looking at another Wild Side show, Fées sans foi, a queer dance musical in which fairies have the right to exist. I'm going to have the creator and choreographer, Nicolas Tremblay. Interesting, he has a background in visual art, but he's a self-taught dancer. So I want to ask him about that as well, because you don't often see that. Usually when someone's choreographing, when they're dancing, they've got a bachelor's degree, they've got this whole litany of dance experience going way, way back. So his artistic journey, I think, is going to be interesting to get into. That is going to be happening January 30th and February the 2nd at La Chapelle. So that is a collaboration between Centaur and La Chapelle as part of the Wildside Festival. And if you want to learn more about Wildside as well, there are some things happening. It's like a very eclectic. It used to be Wildside at Centaur would be like 5 to 6 shows happening almost fringe style, like a show lasting like an hour to 90 minutes max. And there would be maybe like 3 or 4 shows in a given day. And it's since kind of expanded and changed over the years, especially with Ida Holmes' tenure over at the Centaur. So there's a whole more mix of different things going on. Last week, we had a reading, a free reading on the Sunday afternoon from an up and coming play, company. And presentation of Still Life by Talisman Theatre. But what's coming up include this weekend and next includes Ricky by Scapegoat Carnival, which we just got introduced to. Wind Up Radio, Choose Your End, which is a play where the audience gets to weigh in on what happens next. I'm kind of excited for that because the head of the Côte Saint-Luc Dramatic Society, or the professional head of that community theatre production, is going to be performing with her partner on stage. It's they call themselves Wind Up Radio, and that is going to be Friday and Saturday. We also have Confabulation, which is the excellent storytelling made in Montreal storytelling series. They will be having the shortest story. They do this every February and January, roughly, where instead of having like a story that's going to take 10, 15 minutes, it happens in like a matter of seconds or a matter of minutes, it seems like. So that'll be happening on Saturday evening at the Centaur. And then in the following week, Montreal Music with Sarah, the Siegel Lazar, and the Lasers. That's a free music event happening as well. Next week, already booked another show that is going to be part of the La Chapelle collaboration called Agit Pop. We're going to learn more about that next Thursday. So I'm going to get our next guest on the line, Charles Bender. We'll be back in just a moment to find out what he's doing to bridge connections between Indigenous writers outside of Quebec and within Quebec and audiences as well. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, looking at local community student productions happening in this beautiful city, and not just plays that are being staged, but also play readings as well. I have a very interesting event to tell you about. Charles Bender is on the line to tell us about La Semaine de la Dramaturgie Autochtone. I feel like Charles is one of the busiest, and maybe he will dispute this, but one of the busiest people on the scene, because you see his name connected in so many things, an actor and a director, and also now founder of this semaine at Théâtre La Licorne. And he also translates pieces. He's a member of the Wendat community and is a big, big booster of Indigenous artists and Indigenous artistry and stories here in Montreal and elsewhere in Canada. And Shal joins me on the line. Welcome to Upstage. Thank you.
I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, it's so great to have you, Shal. Would you dispute you're very, very busy? Is that just my perception?
This is what's been the talk of the town. Like, all the interviews I've done lately, I've been saying, like, we're lucky to have him because he's really busy. So I don't know how I got that reputation. But yeah, I guess I do have a pretty full schedule.
I only say this because I feel like when I look at through events, I'm constantly parsing events, and I just feel like your name comes up so much, almost to the point where I'm like, is this the same person? Are there two Charles Benders? And I'm like, no, it's good.
No, there's a bottleneck right now. There's a lot of things happening, and I'm trying to push a lot of stuff at the same time. So, you know, some of these things happen, but I do get time off every once in a while.
Yeah, well, that's good. I feel like it's hard because as an artist, you feel like you can't complain when your schedule is chargé, when you're busy, right? Because you don't want to be.
That's pretty much it. You try to add as many, as we say in French, as many strings to your bow as possible.
Yes.
So you end up, you know, doing a lot of stuff. And when nothing happens, you know, you're lucky to have more than one skill. And when when people ask for those skills all at the same time, then it becomes kind of hectic.
Oh, well, that leads us into what we're supposed to be talking about tonight. I will mention as well that audiences are very familiar with you for your years-long work on the Lou Riel play that was put on by Infinite Theater, which was just a joy and incorporated puppets and taught people, I think, things that they didn't know about the story of Louis Riel. So that is how a lot of folks know you, but you also work behind the scenes, director, translator. That's very important when we talk about this event here at La Licorne. So I want you to tell me about your collaboration with Jean-Frédéric Messier and how you guys came to say, like, hey, we need to make more space for English Indigenous writing here in Montreal.
Actually, the way it happened is that I've been translating plays from English playwrights, English Indigenous playwrights for quite a while now. And it was really frustrating because apart from me, nobody was producing them. Mind you, I wasn't pushing them maybe hard enough. I don't know. I was too busy, I guess. But I've been translating quite a few plays. Like right now, I'm starting to have a pretty good library of plays that I've translated. And Philippe at La Licorne, the artistic director there, said, Charles, what would you think about hosting an event where we could read some of those plays and other plays that have been translated from English playwrights? And the idea behind it is that La Licorne has done it before. They've done it with Irish playwrights, with Scottish playwrights. And he thought, well, as long as we're doing it, we might as well try to dive into, you know, things that are from here, from Canada, from the Indigenous communities. And it's good because in English, there's, you know, a very large canon of plays that have been written since the late 60s, early 70s. So we had a lot to pick from, and we had really, really good plays that we could bring forward to a new audience. And the idea behind it was to show people how rich, varied, and brilliant the theater scene for Indigenous people is on the English side. And also to sort of build bridges with this community, because here in Quebec, the French-speaking Indigenous people are kind of stuck in their own bubble. You know, they don't get to be, they don't get reached out quite as much from the English side. So I figured, you know, I'll start the ball moving. I'll send a signal to these guys, you know, hey, I'm translating your plays. Come over and see them and meet some of the authors from over here so we can create more relationships and we can be part of this great, you know, sort of Canadian Indigenous, Turtle Island Indigenous community that loves theater, loves to write, do, produce, direct theater.
So there's a little bit of that behind it. And hopefully some of the plays that we're going to be presenting might get picked up by a theater or another, because they're really, really good scripts.
You're going to be scanning the audience looking for movers and shakers next week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but the press release lists Jean-Frédéric Messier as your acolyte. I'm not sure if that has the exact same connotation as in French as it does in English.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
he said something really interesting, which is that we often talk about the two solitudes, les deux solitudes, français et anglais, English and French. But he was like, more like three solitudes, which is a funny thing to say because we know that there are so many other languages spoken in the country. The English community has a lot of diversity. The Francophone community has diversity. And Indigenous communities, of course, is not uniform. But I really like what he's saying, which is that, hey, we kind of, the rest of us need to have take our heads out of the sand a little bit.
Absolutely. And that, see, that's why I was saying, even if you're talking about three solitudes, that third solitude is two solitudes in itself, because we've been divided by whom got you know, a colonial language, which colonial language you got beaten into you while you were in residential school. I'm sorry, it's kind of brutal, but that's the way I've been trying to explain to some people is, look, not everybody got stuck with English as a colonial language. Some of us got stuck with French as a colonial language, and this should not be a reason to stay apart from one another. We need to create more bridges. So in that sense, I'm speaking to the Indigenous community at large, the English Indigenous community at large. We need to preserve our language. We need to make sure that Indigenous languages stay strong and alive. And there's a movement right now to say that bilingualism in Canada should not be just defined by English and French. But what I say to some of these militants is, be careful that in doing so, by taking this stance, you are not unjustly penalizing Indigenous people, your brothers and sisters on this side of the river that got stuck with French as a colonial language. So there's a bit of that message that I'm sending out at the same time.
This message really resonates for me as someone who's grown up speaking English and French my whole life. We need to broaden our viewpoints, people from the outside, and to be able to support artists who are coming from different communities. So that being said, let's delve into the three shows that you're presenting. You had a hand in translating two out of three. The first evening is Les Femmes de la Traite des Fourrures, Women of the Fur Trade. Tell me about the writer Frances Conkin.
Well, what she gave us as an opus is a really wonderful, absurd, strongly feminist play. It's beautifully written, and it's fun to read. That's the thing. Sometimes theater is not that fun to read off the page. You need to have actors interpret it. You need to have people speak the words out. You know, it's something that you should see enacted on stage, or at least hear out loud. Now, just reading that play was already fun in itself, because she adds things in her stage directions that, you know, are impossible to put on stage. They're just her explaining her vision about the characters, and it's hilarious. So, and it gives you a lot to feed off of when you're actually trying to stage the production. I think Jean-Fred had a lot of fun delving into that. He's the one who did the translation. I was in charge of doing the one for Daniel David Moses, the Almighty Voice, and his wife. And he said he enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm going to be in that reading as well. He asked me to be part of the reading, so I'll be triple dutying, yeah. Or even quadruple dutying during that event.
And Francis, yeah, who is Anishinaabe and Slovenian background, is going to be at the show as well, and will be involved with a talkback.
Let's not sell that point. She can't make it. She's not going to be able to be there, sadly. We're really disappointed about that. But luckily, we have Laurie Marchand, who's going to be coming over, who's the administrative director of the Indigenous department at CN, at the NEC, sorry. Sorry, I'm thinking in French and trying to speak in English. Not always that easy.
That's all right. I think that'll be just as interesting. On the Tuesday night, Thunderstick, which has been translated into Baton de Tonnerre. Did you do the translation for this one?
I did the translation for this one as well. And the person doing the who's going to be directing this reading is Marie-Josée Bastien. She's my cousin. She's from the same community. And we have two great actors doing the reading. We have Dave Jenness and René Rousseau. Dave Jenness, who's Wolastoqué, and René Rousseau, who's Innu. They are going to be doing the reading. And both of them have incredible impeccable comedic timing. And it's a good thing because that play relies entirely on this sort of, you know, red clown, white clown kind of dynamic. And I like this play because it's about two journalists that are looking for the scoop of their life. They are indigenous, but that's not what drives the story. You know, it is revealed sometimes. It is played up. It is useful to the narrative, but it's not absolutely essential. What Kenneth wrote is a comedy about two journalists who want to find the scoop of their life. And I like it because it shows a different aspect of how do you write as an indigenous person without being confined to always write about indigenous issues or you know, characters that are on a res. Or, you know, so you can step out of that and explore other things and explore comedy in a completely different way. So this one is a really good play. Kenneth is an incredible author. He wrote Cafe Daughter, Daughter, amongst other things. And he's going to be there. He's going to be part of the reading. He's going to be there for talkbacks after the reading. So I'm really excited to see him again.
Okay, so that's Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday, to close it out, Qui se souviendra d'elle, Almighty Voice, and His Wife. You mentioned this earlier. This is a piece by Daniel David Moses.
Yeah, the late Daniel David Moses. He left us, what I think, 5 or 6 years ago. And he's, you know, he's a genius. His plays are so complex, and this one in particular, I remember the first time I saw it, it just blew my mind. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. He plays with the codes of theater and representation in a way that I'd never seen before. The play starts off as a sort of historical, you know, historical play. He talks about Almighty Voice, who's a historical character. He's the man who was the subject of the longest manhunt in Canadian history. He killed a cow, and 9 months later, they shot him down with a seven-pound cannon, him and two of his buddies. So, you know, this, no exaggeration whatsoever on the Canadian part, right? The mounted police was hunting him for 9 months, and that's it. That's how they got rid of him. And the play is based around him being on the lam with his wife and their relationship and how, you know, all their sense of future, their sense of self is all around the love that they have for each other and how they want to see better days eventually. But he ends up dying at the end of first act. I'm not revealing anything there. But everybody knows, sadly, that Almighty Voice dies.
I guess since the story takes place in 1885, there's not a lot of spoiling we can necessarily do.
There's not a lot of spoilers, exactly. The thing is, the second act is the surprise.
Okay.
Because Daniel David Moses deconstructs colonialism using the codes of minstrel shows. And for the people who might know minstrel but don't know too much about it, these are the shows that were done in blackface in the United States around the same time period, making fun of black people on plantations, of slaves on plantation, and making fun of how dumb they were and so on and so forth. Now, Daniel David Moses has his two characters, or at least one MC and the ghost of Almighty Voice, having to enact a minstrel show of sorts in whiteface that deconstructs colonialism in Canada through, you know, the most horribly racist jokes. So trigger warning there. There's going to be a lot of that. But there's a point to it. It's not shock for shock's sake. It really is a deconstruction of everything the media has imposed on Indigenous people, on how they perceive themselves, on all the jokes that were written about them, all the you know, editor's letter that were written on the Indigenous people, the songs that mention Indigenous people, you know, everything's in that play. And at the end, we need to have this catharsis of, you know, we need to get rid of this perspective, of this image that's been imposed on us.
Well, you're ending the week with quite a punch. So that's going to be Wednesday night. The last thing I want to ask you, Charles, is what we talked about, what this means for the audiences of the theater community. What do you think it means for these writers? As you said, Daniel is no longer with us, but the writers and the dramaturgs, what does this mean to have this play presented in a different language in a totally different community?
Well, hopefully we'll get to ask Kenneth when he's going to be around. I'd love to hear what Francis thinks about it. I know that before with Production Menuentaguen, my company, I'd produced Where the Blood Mixes. I translated and produced Where the Blood Mixes, and Kevin was really quite enchanted to know that it would have a life in this other language, and it would reach out to indigenous populations that have French as a colonial language. I think Drew was pretty happy, was pretty pleased to know that we'd be touring the show in French, alternatives. My objective, once again, is to create those bridges between Indigenous people that got stuck with English as a colonial language and Indigenous people that got French as a colonial language. I want to make sure that we keep those paths, those connections open, and keep reaching out to each other. And, of course, I want people in Quebec, the people that will come to see the reading, and there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of theater people, obviously, because people who go see readings, sometimes it's a little bit niche, so we're going to have a lot of actors, actresses, directors and so on and so forth that are going to come and see that. I hope some of them are going to see how important, how brilliant, how beautiful, how diversified is Indigenous dramaturgy, and that we're going to keep encouraging it here in this province.
Charles, keep up the wonderful work. I'm really so in awe of what you're doing, and thank you for your contributions and putting this event on with Mr. Messier next week.
Thanks to you. Thank you for having me over.
That is the very talented Charles Bender, who is an actor and a director and the co-founder of what they're calling Semaine de la Dramaturgie Autochtone. So starting on Monday, running until Wednesday at Théâtre La Licorne. Very affordable, $5 for subscribers and $10 for everyone else. For more information, visit théâtrelalicorne.com, where the schedule is listed out. So there is a reading on each night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at 7 o'clock. You can visit théâtrelalicorne.com or call 514-523-2246. They also have a biography up of Charles as well, if you'd like to know more about him and his work. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. One more final conversation for the evening. We'll meet the creator of Fée Sans Foi, carving out a queer existence in Quebec. Back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are going to go from La Licorne all the way to La Chapelle Sainte Contemporaine, where you can catch next week a show called Fée Sans Foi. I'm going to play some of the music here for you from the composition. It's all original music.
Ma reine, où tu logis des étoiles.
Driving techno score, party vibe, Fée Sans Foi is an exploration of the idea of fairies having the right to exist. That is pulled from the statement by the artist. It's inspired by musicals, but it is meant to be a queer dance musical specifically. The creator is trying to carve out a space of what it means to be queer in Francophone Quebec. The person in question is Georges-Nicolas Tremblay. He is the creator, the choreographer, and will also be performing with three other dancers on stage during the show, which is January 29th and 30th, and then February the 2nd, so next week at La Chapelle. Georges-Nicolas joins me on the line. Welcome to Upstage.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. You heard some of the wonderful music from the show, which was composed for it. What was going through your head as you were listening to that?
A little bit of nervous. I mean, a little bit nervous because it just reminds me that, it's really soon. We're right now in theater, like rehearsing every day, finishing the lights and the soundscape. So, it's quite exciting.
Something interesting about you is that you've worked in a variety of different musical formats, traditional musicals, music videos, on theater, in operettas as well. And here you are doing this show that is, I think, very personal, I can only imagine. What is it like to transition from creating something for others and for larger audiences of musical, but here you're doing something at La Chapelle where your imagination, your creativity can run rampant, run wild?
It's really exciting. In fact, I mean, I did a lot of different things, but I've worked mostly in contemporary dance as a performer, as a dancer, and also as a choreographer. I did I would say traditional, I don't know what's traditional contemporary dance, but like the form of like the dance being the motor of the process, the creative process and the result on stage. And in this specific project, that's where I went a little bit out of my comfort zone by even writing the songs and developing this combination of the creative process of a contemporary dance form, but also mixing with like my passion for musicals and all the work with like lyrics and songs and how dance can also shape the understanding of the lyrics as well.
When people talk about musicals, Georges-Nicolas, they often reach way, way, way back. Something that you watched with your family, you were very young when you saw that. Was that the case for you?
It was, in fact. It's probably the way I even was drawn to dance first. That was probably my first real contact with dance. I never saw a performance on stage when I was younger. So it was like a way for me to connect. And I remember sometimes even, just watching those movies over, like learning bits of choreography and like trying to mimicking what I was seeing. So I think that's why there's such a big impact of musical and the passion for that style that stick with me since that time.
So that idea of adopting the conventions, learning about them, but then getting to subvert them.
Yeah. Well, it's, one thing that it's funny also about musical, because even if though it, that they often fall in like the stereotypical like relationship love story between a man and a woman, there were like often written and created by queer people. In fact, like a lot of composers, a lot of like choreographers. In fact, so it's like a world that was kind of a safe space for queer people, even though if they were in a conventional like form or stories, I think it gave them a place of expression. And if you look at some of the lyrics that some of those composers did back then, there was sometimes of innuendo of like this, even if it's a girl singing, and like the words that are used sometimes are implying something of a queer love that was kind of disguised there. So I think it's also something that I find quite interesting.
We're speaking with Georges-Nicolas Tremblay, who is the creator and choreographer and performing as well in Fée sans foi at La Chapelle, coming to you next week. You just touched on, of course, the queer background to a lot of musicals, and identity is important to you because it seems to me like you're asking the question of like, how do we make space for ourselves? How do we find ourselves, not just within the larger community as a queer person, but within the queer community itself? Have you always wrestled with those questions?
Honestly, not. It's something that's quite recent. It's something I developed more while I was doing my master in dance and was researching dramaturgy and like questioning also the system of domination or like the power dynamics within creative process that I came to encounter more, like all the queer thinking and that I thought it was really fascinating. And I had this, like, let's call it a queer awakening. I'm an homosexual, but I mean, it was for me something that it was more than just a sexual desire in queerness. I feel that there's sort of a political statement and an affirmation that it's not just identity. I feel for me that it's like a question. It's like putting in question the identities, in fact, more than being an identity itself to be queer. So, like, questioning the norms and questioning even what's my identity in the end. Is it dictated by stereotype, or can I make myself my own identity?
Are you saying that, to be queer can be a radical thing, to make space for yourself, but do you feel are you saying you're challenging even that convention of what it means to be the outsider or the underdog or the person who needs to work that much harder to make community, to make a career?
I feel like it is for me. I mean, I'm not like I don't own the word queerness, but
right,
I feel like
right.
for me, I feel like for me, it was a way of like engaging further. It's not that I was hiding my sexual identity, mm-hmm. but I think the idea of like the queerness is like going a little bit further in my thought process about, like, as I said, the norms or the convention that we're used to, that we should follow or that we should understand. And it goes also with like the binaries of like genders, of course. And while creating that show, I think I wanted to maybe go further in like something that was a fantasy. So bringing it into this idea of a fairy, being able to be a fantasy character, to create yourself. So it's not even about like defining my own gender or being gender fluid. It's like allowing even more fantasy so it could speak to everybody, that desire of just being who you want to be in a way.
Georges Nicolas, looking at the trailer and the imagery, it also looks like it's just a very fun show. Am I right about that?
Yes, it is. I'm using also like what is quite typical of the queer culture, which is the camp style as well. And in musical, sometimes camp is quite used, and I love that. So there is like, I feel like we touch a vulnerability as well, meaning that we share things that are quite personal. So, but we also bring some lightness to it and some fun and some like of course music that also sometimes really like dance vibe, like this one in the trailer. And yeah, there's definitely comedy as well that can come out, that will come out for sure in it as well. So I think it's also not taking ourselves too seriously in
right.
that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is always very important and a lot of fun. Georges Nicolas, besides seeing the show, how can we keep up with you and your work?
Besides that, I'm also working. I'm a co-artistic director of a company called Corpuscule Danse, which is an inclusive dance company, meaning that we work with people with disabilities. So I think that's a part that I'm working a lot as well. And I was presenting a creation that I co-created last December at the CNA, NCA, in fact, National Art Center, NAC, sorry. Translating sometimes in my mind. Anyway, so yeah, my work is also my new creation, like that I'm starting next year, is going to be with that company as well.
We will look for that. Georges Nicolas, thank you so much for being on the show. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for you for having me.
That was Georges Nicolas Tremblay, who is the creator and choreographer of Fait Sans Foi. For tickets and more information, billetterie at lachapelle.org. You've been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Sarah Day. I will be back with you next week with more stories about theater in the city. Thanks so much for tuning in. Up next is Upstage on CKUT. Up next is Grey Matters with my friend Fortner Anderson.
GemArt Center is pleased to present When Big Man Talk, the exhibit. Come experience a captivating fusion of paintings, photography, an immersive virtual reality experience and more. To kick off the exhibit, GemArt is presenting the film African Redemption,
The Life and Legacy of Marcus Garvey, screening January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. Then experience When Big Men Talk, the exhibit, from February 3 to 10 at Galerie Lucie Michel, and after that from February 11 to 14 at the UNIA. For tickets, call 438-507-9258 or head to jam-montreal.com and click Jam Arts Center. Good evening and welcome to the January 25th edition of Gray Matters. Tonight on the show we have a lecture entitled Gaza, A Case of Genocide. It was recorded in The Hague, Netherlands, on January 11th of this year. The speakers are Adila Hassim, Richard Falk, and Irene Genzier. Adila Hassim is a South African lawyer, human rights activist, and senior counsel at Tula Ema Chambers. She represented the South Africa